Hey, welcome back to the Michael Lofton Show here on Reason and Theology. I want to talk about the Bishop Strickland affair and how it is currently developing. He recently spoke in Rome at the Rome Life Forum, and there is an article about his speech, which certainly has raised some eyebrows. And I think in many ways, it's kind of sealed his fate. Of course, I think most of us are aware that he has been, the Vatican has been looking at him and evaluating him for a while now. And there was a visitation to his diocese, and we're kind of waiting to hear back from Rome on how Pope Francis has or is going to evaluate him, if he hasn't already, or if he hasn't done so already. We do have some reports that Pope Francis has already, offered some of his thoughts on Bishop Strickland, but nothing has been made known publicly yet. So we're still kind of waiting on that process. But I feel like with this speech at the Rome Life Forum, it certainly seems that Bishop Strickland has kind of sealed his fate. I don't know if there's any recovering from the position that he has adopted here, unfortunately. So we're going to take a look at it. It's actually quite disturbing, the stance that he has adopted very, very quickly. And I think that one of the reasons why is once you kind of detach yourself from obedience to the magisterium, you quickly spiral out of control. You'll recall that it was last year, a little over a year ago, the Bishop Strickland condemned the papal magisterium for teaching heresy. He publicly signed a document accusing the papal magisterium of teaching heresy in Desiderio Desideravi. And ever since then, I've just kind of been noticing a spiraling out of control. And it seems like that has culminated in this point, in this particular speech. And it's very, very troubling. I was hoping it was going to go a different direction. Y'all probably know I've done videos where when he was originally given an apostolic visitation, and was being assessed, I was hoping that he was going to take it in a different direction and that he would just kind of quiet down on social media and would just become more docile to the papal magisterium and the government structure of the church. But unfortunately, he just completely went in the opposite direction, as we know, on social media, just kind of took a very different approach and has been painting himself out to be a martyr. And so he's unfortunately gone in the wrong direction. I was hoping it wouldn't go that way, because I was still hoping that he could recover from the apostolic visitation and that he could learn from it and be a very effective bishop in his own diocese. I still maintain to this day he has a lot of great qualities to be an effective bishop in our day and age. He has a lot of those great qualities. And it's so sad to see them squandered by the direction that he has taken, unfortunately. So let's take a look, because, again, I think it kind of culminates in this speech that he recently gave. I'm going to share my screen so that you can see it and follow along with me. This is, of course, published by LifeSite News. And it says, Bishop Strickland, we must follow the example of the saints and martyrs in defense of the faith. Well, I certainly agree with that that title, that headline. But as we're going to discover, what he means by this is we are following the saints and martyrs in defense of the faith over and against Rome, which is always how schisms develop. You know, a schismatic will usually attack the magisterium itself, and will say the magisterium itself is opposing the faith, and then they will set themselves up as a parallel magisterium and sometimes establish a parallel community. That's generally what happens in the history of schisms. They will set themselves in opposition to the Bishop of Rome, and they'll claim that the Bishop of Rome is teaching heresy or is schismatic or is this or is that. And they'll say, we have to maintain the faith. We have to maintain the ways of the martyrs. And, you know, you can look at Martin Luther. He was saying the exact same thing. We're maintaining the fathers. We're maintaining the ways of the saints. And it's Rome who's abandoned those things. And so that's generally how it happens in church history. And it seems like this is being repeated here. It continues. Bishop Strickland recalled the example of St. John Fisher, who gave up his life against the heretical claim of Henry VIII to be the head of the church in England. And that's true. But you recall, St. John Fisher was not opposed to the magisterium of the Catholic Church and was not opposing Rome or the Pope himself. Whereas in this case, we're going to see Rome itself is being imputed with certain claims that are problematic. All right, so it begins. Bishop Joseph Strickland of Tyler, Texas, told Catholics gathered in Rome at LifeSite News, Roman Life Forum, that they cannot play nicely when heresy threatens the faith, and that this would mock the blood of the martyrs, which consecrated the city of Rome to Christ. Strickland began his address October 31st, so this was very, very recent. I mean, we're November 4th right now. By reading a letter sent to him by a Catholic layman prior to the bishop's trip to the Eternal City for the Roman or Rome Life Forum, a conference founded by LifeSite News editor-in-chief John Henry Weston. In the letter, which Strickland said he thought was intended not only for him, but also for those present, the prelate admonished, "You cannot indeed, you must not go to Rome and play nicely. The Queen of Martyrs has called you, and you cannot parcel out truth in pieces." Now, that's a curious phrase. The Queen of Martyrs has called you. Where do you think that comes from? Well, I actually covered this before. Over here in Crisis Magazine, this was published July 17, 2023. Bishop Strickland speaks of an alleged interior allocution that he received from the Virgin Mary. And he says, quote, "I remember clearly saying that day, I will never back down from proclaiming the truth. In a sense, Mary was calling me to die that day. She was, in a way, I think, asking me to accept the martyrdom that comes from preaching truth alone." So Bishop Strickland seems to be under the impression that he has a mission from the Virgin Mary to be a martyr for preaching the truth. And unfortunately, Bishop Strickland interprets and sets that disposition up in contradistinction to Rome. In other words, that he is going to be a Roman martyr, going to be a martyr for the Virgin Mary for preaching the truth over and against Rome. Which is truly unfortunate, because if a person is so deluded as to think that, there is nothing that you could ever say to them. You can never call them back and say, "Hey, no, you're behaving in a schismatic fashion. You're removing yourself from the Catholic Church." You can never admonish such a person or correct them, because they would be under the delusion that no matter what, I have a free license to oppose Rome and what it is saying, because I am called to be a martyr from the truth by the Virgin Mary. So that, rather than understanding, okay, that we're called to be a martyr for the truth, and maybe even had that call from the Virgin Mary, rather than understanding that as something to do, not in opposition to Rome, but alongside of Rome, it seems that we're seeing him understanding this as being a martyrdom over and against Rome, which, again, if a person truly believes that and is so deluded as to believing that, there's nothing that you could say to them to help them at that point. Because if they're convinced that the Virgin Mary is calling them to be a preacher for the truth over and against Rome, what are you going to appeal to? You can't appeal to the magisterium. The magisterium is centered around the papacy. So if now the papacy itself is that which you're opposing, there's no recourse here, because the person can always say, "Well, I have a direct mandate from heaven," effectively. Which, of course, if a person does have such a thing, it would always be backed up by miracles, right? If they have an extraordinary mission over and against the ordinary mission of the church, and in this case, it would be the ordinary mission of the papacy, then it would have to be backed up by miracles. So I'm starting to see a very troubling development here. But to further substantiate this concern, let's continue reading and you'll see what I'm saying. The Queen of Martyrs has called you, and you cannot parcel out truth in pieces. The Synod has gathered crowds in Rome, those who not only refuse to die for our Lord and his church, but indeed demand that his eternal truths be changed. I mean, that is a slight against all of the bishops and cardinals there. So are we suggesting that the bishops and cardinals who met in Rome are not willing to be martyrs and die for the eternal truths of our Lord? And I don't know, that doesn't sound right. And if you play nicely with these, then you mock the martyrs, it continues. It is not the blood of the cowards that is seed of the church. It is the blood of the martyrs, the letter continued. And in Rome has been literally consecrated by the blood of Christians. As Tertullian wrote, we multiply when you reap us. The blood of Christians is seed. It is easy to assert that no real damage has been done to the church by the synod. But it has done untold damage in attempting to cheapen what Christ has said was worth his life and for which he indeed shed his precious blood. Playing nicely with those who attack truth makes no man a disciple. This sounds more like somebody who has just been reading wild-eyed rad-trad news and their evaluation of the synod over and against the actual facts. Wow. I mean, obviously, there are some concerns with some of the individuals at the Synod and some of the things that they've said. But in reality, when you really just look at the Synod itself, this is pretty far from the truth. So this sounds more like just something that comes from fake news and an evaluation of fake news, more than the documents themselves. Okay, well, Strickland himself went on to say that he would not be silent in the face of blatant attacks on the faith, but would continue to speak out in defense of Catholic teaching. Well, you know, I kind of thought that that was also the role of the papacy, according to Pastor Eternus, chapter 4, paragraphs 6 and 7, and that there are promises to the papacy that it would not fail in that mission. So if one is going to face attacks on the faith and speak the truth, they need to do so in conjunction with Rome, not in opposition to Rome. That's the problem here. What unfortunately happens is some people end up setting themselves up as a parallel magisterium in opposition to Rome, historically speaking. And they see the papacy as no longer guarding the deposit of faith, and they see themselves as called to guard the deposit of faith. Again, Martin Luther all over again. So, here we go. The prevailing imprudence in our church today is not speaking out inappropriately. I'd rather do that than not speak out when it's necessary, absolutely necessary, he declared. To which those listening responded with loud applause. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the beauty of the glorious Latin Mass, which the bishop noted has come under attack by the Vatican. So Rome is attacking the Latin Mass. Strickland said he was moved to tears the first time he celebrated the traditional Latin Mass. Regarding the traditional liturgy, Strickland lamented the way in which it has come under attack from Rome. One of the most frustrating things coming out of the Vatican, and it's supported at least by Pope Francis, is the attack on the sacred, he said, admonishing that we must never allow the Mass to become routine. Well, notice a couple things here. Number one, an attack on the sacred, as if the sacred is no longer preserved in the ordinary form. As if the sacred is only preserved in the extraordinary form. If the sacred is preserved in the ordinary form, then Pope Francis, by restricting, and not even entirely restricting, but restricting to an extent, the extraordinary form, is not attacking the sacred, because the sacred's still available in the ordinary form, is it not? Well, of course it is. I sure hope that he would say it is. So it's not an attack on the sacred by Pope Francis. But notice the deluded and delusional understanding of traditionis custodis. We might criticize what Pope Francis has done and the direction he has taken, but let's make no mistake about it. Pope Francis would not have restricted access to the Missal of 1962 if people had not used it as a point of dissent against the Magisterium and the Second Vatican Council. So, you can blame those people for this happening. You can blame the SSPX and others, and those who are SSPX friendly within Catholic Communion. You can blame them for using a good thing, the Missal of 1962, a great and holy thing, using that to set themselves in opposition to Rome in the Magisterium. You can thank them for it, not Pope Francis. Pope Francis is simply trying to address that problem. Now, we might say, well, Holy Father, I think there's a better way to handle this, perhaps. But ultimately, the point of contention here is not Pope Francis and his restriction. It's rather the people who are using it to oppose the papal magisterium and even the conciliar magisterium, the magisterium of the Second Vatican Council. So that is effectively the issue here. And for one to not understand that and to interpret this as attacking the sacred is delusional. Pope Francis is not attacking the sacred. If that were the case, he would also attack anything sacred found in the ordinary form, but he hasn't. Why? Well, because he is addressing those who attempt to use the Missal of 62 to foment schism and dissent. That's why. So, and again, Pope Francis hasn't just completely banned it or anything like that. He is restricting access so that people who are ordained after a certain period of time, if they wish to celebrate it, must get permission from their local bishop and Rome. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that whatsoever, given the fact that people have abused the Missal of 1962. Now, in fairness to the Latin Mass goers, I would simply say, well, people who are also abusing the Novus Ordo also need to have a heavy hand and discipline. I mean, personally, I would say you need to discipline them. You know, Rome, local bishops, they need to discipline those people too. We need to be consistent here, not just one group. But it's kind of like two children who are both wrong. And one of the children says, well, you can't punish me, because so-and-so did it too, kind of thing. And it's like, wait, even if your brother or sister did something too, that doesn't mean that you can't be disciplined. But a good father is going to say, but I'm actually going to discipline both of y'all, not just one of y'all. I'm going to send both of y'all to your rooms, not just one of y'all. Right. And so I think that's where we can offer some legitimate criticism of traditionis custodis. And I'm sympathetic to that. But I'm not sympathetic to those who want to say that Pope Francis is attacking the sacred. That's when you go too far with your criticism. And it's absurd. It's also slanderous to make that claim against Rome. So it's kind of sad to see that he's going down this direction. One second here. Sorry, I had to respond to that message there. Okay, well, let's continue with the article here. Highlighting the example of the many saints who courageously defended the faith to the point of suffering persecution and shedding of blood, including Saint Peter Damian, who had to face the horrible LGBTQYZXZ of his time, Strickland said. We were born for times such as this. And, oh, okay, Hey, I'm right there with you in fighting against people who push for immorality. Yeah, we're born for that. But the point is, we have to do so not in opposition to Rome, but in conjunction with Rome. We don't have to see the Pope as opposed to us in this mission. We need to understand that he's on our side in this mission. That's where we go too far, unfortunately. Highlighting the example of the many saints, or I'm sorry, we read that one. Recalling the example of St. John Fisher, who lost his head for saying to the king, "No, I'm not going to declare you head of the church," Strickland declared. Bishops today need to say, "No, we're not going to pretend truth can change." Well, you know what? Pope Francis has explicitly said that truth can't change, the deposit of faith can't change, dogma can't change. He's explicitly said those things. So rather than reassure us of what Pope Francis says, he presents this assertion as if it's somehow opposed to Rome. It's not. Rome has been saying that. So rather than spend all this energy attempting to set yourself in opposition to Rome, why don't you just simply say, "Hey, I agree with the Holy Father that dogma can't change." You know, why not present it that way? Why do you have to present yourself as opposed to Rome? Strickland is known for his outspoken defense of the perennial truths of the faith, recently issuing several pastoral letters on important teachings on the moral life, the sacraments, and salvation through the church. This year's Rome Life Forum runs from October 31st to November 1st, immediately following the Vatican's Synod on Synodality. Here's the kicker, which threatens to formalize heretical teaching. I told you these guys don't have the faith. I told you that. I told you, I've been telling y'all, they don't have the faith. They don't have it. They lack faith in the church's indefectibility. They honestly believe that the church can formalize heretical teachings. I've told you over and over and over, they lack faith in the church's indefectibility. They think they have this theological error that the Holy Spirit only protects ex cathedra teachings and maybe a few solemn definitions of an ecumenical council. But aside from that, the church can teach heresy every day, embrace heresy every day, formalize heresy every day. The Pope can wake up, have his coffee, eat a cereal, and write a new encyclical every day. And then in that new encyclical every day will be heresy after heresy after heresy. And he can write new canons and canon law and use the structure of the church and the disciplines of the church to implement injurious and destructive things contrary to the faith. And he can do so every single day. But you know what? The church's indefectibility is still intact. It's still intact. And the teaching authority of the church is still intact because in these really rare circumstances, the church is free from error in its teaching. Nobody should take that position seriously. A Protestant would laugh at that because your magisterium becomes functionally useless. If for 2,000 years, every single day, the church can teach heresy, as long as it doesn't do so ex cathedra in a solemn definition, it can teach heresy every day and use all of the structure of the Catholic Church and all of its organs and government to destroy the church. It can do so, but hey, the promises of Christ and, you know, hell, the gates of hell won't prevail and all of that is still intact because a few ex cathedra definitions are free from error. You know, what? No, obviously. And according to the magisterium itself, there is also a protection of the Holy Spirit, even over non-definitive teachings, even over prudential and disciplinary decisions of the church. There's still a safety there. And I've told you over and over, they start with that theological error. They adopted that theological error of limiting the church's indefectibility, especially in its teaching authority, to merely ex cathedra teachings and solemn definitions. Like the tunnel vision, that's it. And everything else can go up in flames. I told you they start with that theological error, and that is how they then interpret everything that they see after that. That is why they go wild. That is why they start saying the church is, you know, the Pope is using the structure of the church itself to wage war against the church. I told you, they don't have the faith. They don't have it. They believe the church could formalize heresy, and they're here to save the day. They're here to be the heroes and the martyrs over and against Rome. Aha. But you see, that's what the schismatics do every single time in church history. These guys are on the wrong side of church history, as I'll continue to stress. Strickland, LifeSite News, Vigano, all of these guys, they're on the wrong side of church history. And eventually, Rome will be vindicated. These guys may or may not be condemned by name, but certainly their position will be condemned. Most likely by either a future pope or a future ecumenical council. But this stuff will be condemned, either by name or at least in general. They're on the wrong side of church history. And it's unfortunate, because I honestly believe that Strickland could do a lot of good for the church in his local diocese. But I think when he adopts this kind of stance in opposition to Rome and paints himself out to be a martyr and even thinks that he's a martyr called by the Virgin Mary to preach the truth, even if it means to oppose Rome, I think that we've lost sight of some things here. And unfortunately, I think he's kind of sealed his fate. I don't think there's any coming back from this. Like, if Pope Francis were to look at the situation, I don't think that he could ever trust Bishop Strickland again with this kind of stance. It's kind of like Vigano. With Vigano's stance that he has taken at this point, Pope Francis could never trust the guy ever again. Even if Vigano came out tomorrow, completely repented, ceased his sedevacantism, retracted everything, formally apologized, you know, and tried to make whole the name of Pope Francis that he has so often slandered, I think that even then it would kind of be a thing where, you know, Pope Francis would obviously need to simply forgive him and accept that, right? But I don't think he could ever trust him again, and he could never really put him in a position of authority ever again. And it's kind of the same thing with Strickland. I think we've crossed that point where even if Strickland just completely does a 180 and says, look, I went too far, I'm sorry, I lost sight of myself, you're right, I embrace certain theological errors here, I see there are my ways, I'm going to adjust, all that would be great, but I still don't think that he could ever, by Pope Francis or any pope, be trusted with a diocese again after that. It's like we've gone to the point of no return, you know. Maybe people can still be in good relations with one another, but actually being, you know, a pastor in the church, that's a different subject. And I think we've crossed that line at this point. So I fully expect, unfortunately, sorry, I'm sick here. I've been fighting sickness for at least 3 days now. I fully expect, unfortunately, for Strickland to be relieved of ministry. I don't know if he'll be laicized, but I do think he's going to be removed from his role as Bishop of Tyler. It's only a matter of time before that happens. I don't know how soon that will be, but it will happen. And honestly, I kind of feel like he could have changed that after the apostolic visitation. I think he could have taken it a different direction and spared himself of that judgment. But rather, I think he doubled, tripled, quadrupled down and, yeah, kind of reached that point of no return. So it's unfortunate, but that's what I expect to happen at this point. Let's certainly pray for him that at least in his, you know, in his role as a private person, that he turns away from this. Because here's what I suspect is going to happen with Strickland. Not only is he going to be removed from ministry, but I think what's going to happen is with the people he's surrounding himself with, and especially with any kind of resentment that might come from being disciplined, I could easily see him very, very rapidly and very quickly going the wrong direction. I mean, he's already going the wrong direction, but I think it's going to be expedited and made even more extreme once he is disciplined, because of the people that he surrounds himself with. It doesn't seem that he has good voices and personalities around him, checking him and helping him. It seems rather they're feeding into this. So I think what's going to happen is once he's removed, it's going to go south really, really quickly. It's already going south really, really quickly. I think it's going to be 100 times worse then. Where will that lead? I mean, historically, how do things like this end up? You know, it doesn't look good. Sometimes people create their own parallel church. You know, sometimes they don't, but they just work against the church and their writings and stuff like that. There's a lot of directions this can go. But given the people he's surrounding himself with, especially LifeSite News, who's already backing up Vigano, who is himself overseeing illicit liturgies, and they're structuring and sending out disciplined priests to celebrate illicit liturgies over and against the local bishop, it's only a matter of time before guys, you know, start teaming up. They start, you know, ordaining illicitly bishops and kind of creating their parallel church, because they think that they have to preserve the faith. You know, Rome is defected from the faith effectively. So we got to preserve it. And so desperate times call for desperate measures. We can illicitly ordain bishops without Rome. And then they create their parallel church. We're already seeing Vigano and LifeSite News facilitating a creation of a parallel church. It's only going to be expedited whenever you get a few other bishops on board. So 10, 20 years from now, could we see a completely new parallel church that these guys have created? It's very likely. Very, very likely. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they turn away from this. I hope they prove me wrong. I'd be more than happy to come here on YouTube, say, hey, they proved me wrong. I was wrong. I'd be more than happy to do that. Let's see if they'll prove me wrong. Pray for them. And if y'all have any questions, make sure to put them in the comment section there. And hey, hit that like button and the subscribe button. If you want to support me, patreon.com/reasonedtheology is a great way to do it. Also, there's a GoFundMe link and a PayPal link there in the show notes if you want to support me through that. Okay, guys, that is going to do it. We will see y'all later. God bless.
Are you a Catholic thinking about converting to Eastern Orthodoxy? Or are you a Protestant discerning whether or not to become Catholic or Eastern Orthodox? If so, I have the book just for you. It's called Answering Orthodoxy. It engages all of the arguments that Eastern Orthodox use against the Catholic Church. I respond to all of them. I show that they are in error, and in fact, they're inconsistent. Because the things that Orthodox are objecting to are in fact found in their own tradition. So the fullness of the faith can only be found in the Catholic Church. Check out the book right now at shop.catholic.com for your copy today.